Hi, it's Charlie Connolly here. I write every week in the New European on books and literature and great European lives. If you'd like to enjoy more from the New European, you can join us by subscribing at theneweuropean.co.uk/subscribe. That's theneweuropean.co.uk/subscribe. Great European Lives from the New European. Jean Bar, 21st of October 1650 to the 27th of April 1702. When the British finally caught Jean Bar in 1689, it was quite a coup. A Dunkirk-based privateer sailing on behalf of Louis XIV, Bar had wrought havoc up and down the English Channel for 15 years, by the time two 50-gun warships bore down on his 24-gun frigate off the Isle of Wight. It was in the early stages of what would become the 9 Years' War, in which an expansionist France, powerful under Louis, was facing resistance from a wide coalition of European states. The capture of the charismatic sea captain was considered a major blow to French hopes. Bar and a fellow officer named Claude de Forbin, both wounded during capture, were taken to Plymouth, but soon charmed the governor of the jail into dining with them regularly, despite the fact a badly injured Forbin had been stripped naked on arrival and left that way. Won over by their clubbable bonhomie and cultured civility, the governor transferred his highly prized captures out of the vulgar surroundings of the prison to more amenable accommodation in a room above a local inn. Bars were fixed over the window and sentries posted outside, but it was still a great improvement on a draughty, damp cell. Forbin even got his clothes back. Bar realised this unconventional imprisonment offered his best chance of escape, and he began to plan accordingly. Especially when, by chance, stormy weather forced a French fishing boat with a relative from Ostend in its crew into Plymouth for shelter. When the fisherman learned of his kinsman's incarceration nearby, he was permitted to visit him at the inn and managed to, surreptitiously, hand over a large metal file. Bar instructed his visitor to locate a boat in which they could escape across the channel, and commence sawing through the window bars. The sentries, delighted to find themselves being paid to sit in a pub, spent most of their watches in drunken stupors, making their charge's task a little easier than it might have been. Once the bars had been dealt with, the Ostend fishermen stole a boat and, under cover of darkness, signalled to Bar and Forbin that all was ready. With their guards snoring happily outside the door, the pair descended via knotted bedsheets and crept through the darkened streets to the harbour. The night was calm and a perfectly timed fog had descended to aid an undetected departure. The men slipped their boat into the water and heaved away on the oars in the direction of France. As they left the harbour, a patrolling British naval cutter loomed up, a dark silhouette in the mist, demanding to know what kind of vessel they were. "Fishing boat," called Bar casually, in the best English accent he could muster. The cutter passed on. For 2.5 days they rowed in the fast-running Channel tides, always at risk of discovery by British vessels, until they finally made landfall on the coast of Brittany. Approached by sentries tasked with preventing Huguenot refugees from escaping to England, Bar and Forbin learned they'd been given up for dead. The return of Bar in particular proved a valuable boost to French morale and freed up the swashbuckling seamen to dominate events in the Channel for many more years to come. He came from a long line of military and maritime figures. Born in Dunkirk in 1650, to a soldier father who died in battle fighting for the Dutch against the English, and a Spanish mother. His grandfather, Coril Voice, had been a sea captain fighting for the Spanish against the Dutch during the 80 Years' War. His great-grandfather, Mikael Jacobsen, was a privateer and also a respected pilot who shepherded what remained of the traumatised Spanish Armada back to safety in 1588. Awarded the prestigious Cross of St. James by Philip of Spain for his actions against the Dutch and the English, Voice earned the nickname the Fox of the Seas. In 1622, Barr's great-uncle, Jan Jacobsen, blew up his ship and himself in the English Channel, rather than surrender to the Dutch. This illustrious ancestry made it inevitable that Jean Barr would go to sea, and at the age of 11 in 1662, he joined the crew of a corsair. 5 years later, he was part of the audacious Dutch raid on the River Medway that scored impressive successes against English ships at Chatham Dockyard, in the process towing away the Royal Navy's flagship, the Royal Charles, to cause maximum humiliation. When Louis XIV declared war on the Dutch in 1672, Barr aligned himself with the French king and began to build a formidable reputation for harassing shipping in both the Channel and the North Sea. During the war with the Dutch, he skippered his vessel through 6 battles in which he captured 81 ships. Achievements so notable, he was made an officer of the French Navy, the first time a man not born into the nobility had been elevated beyond the ranks. By the 1690s, following his audacious escape from Plymouth, Barr began setting about the Dutch North Sea herring fleets in an effort to starve out the nation. On 2 occasions, he battered his way through an attempted blockade of English ships designed to prevent him even leaving Dunkirk, his 7 small frigates proving too much for the greatest navy in the world. Arguably his greatest achievement came in June 1694. With his son François, who would go on to become a vice-admiral, Barr had already successfully defended Dunkirk against English attacks, while 2 successive grain crop failures and a string of blockades left France in the grip of a famine that led to thousands of deaths. A desperate French government managed to secure a convoy of 120 ships from Norway, packed with grain. But the route inevitably took them through dangerous waters. Jean Barr was given command of 9 frigates to escort what was effectively a nation-saving flotilla safely through the North Sea. A breakdown in communication meant the grain convoy set off before Barr arrived and was almost immediately captured by the Dutch. Barr scoured the North Sea coast in search of the fleet and found them just off the island of Texel, close to the Dutch coast. Without hesitation, Barr sailed straight for the Dutch flagship in charge of the convoy, and within 30 minutes had outwitted, outmanoeuvred, and outgunned the opposition in an extraordinary display of military seamanship, against almost impossible odds. Barr sailed the convoy home to Dunkirk, where he was greeted by crowds celebrating with wild abandon. He had almost literally saved the nation, bringing home enough grain to avert the worst of the famine until the next home crop could be harvested. Immediately he was summoned to Versailles, where Louis XIV made him a Knight of the Order of St. Louis. Lifting a man once barred by his humble birth from simple naval promotion to the ranks of the French nobility. According to legend, when Louis asked his naval hero to describe how he'd attacked the Dutch, he hauled the courtiers in the room into positions representing the Dutch ships, then attacked them in the order he'd attacked the vessels, knocking them to the ground with his fists as he recreated the skirmish. The newly ennobled Barr was far from finished. In 1696 he outwitted the combined nous of the British and Dutch commanders at the Battle of Dogger Bank, again forcing his way successfully through a blockade to bring home 25 captured merchant ships and 1,200 prisoners. By the end of the 9 Years' War, Barr had been responsible for the sinking of 30 enemy warships and the capture of more than 200 merchant vessels. In 1702 he was in the process of assembling a fleet ready for the War of the Spanish Succession, when he fell ill with pleurisy and died at his home in Dunkirk. The whole of France mourned. Today, a statue of Barre dominates the square in the town that carries his name. Sword raised, looking towards the English Channel, in a pose that combines the courage and panache that made him one of Europe's most extraordinary maritime figures. The fate of the governor of Plymouth Jail isn't recorded. Great European Lives is brought to you by The New European. It's written and presented by Charlie Connolly, and the series producer is Steve Anglesey.